15 after 7 o'clock. As you know, we have been on a permanent code red since the 15th of March 2020. For almost 2 years now, South Africa has lived under strict regulations in as a part of that state of disaster. Now, as the number of deaths due to the pandemic continue to decline, is it time to do away with the restrictions? Are they still fit for purpose? That is the question we want to answer. We're joined by two leading experts, voices you've become familiar with hearing in terms of our handling of the pandemic. We're joined by Professor Musa Moshabela, who is the Professor of Public Health and the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research and Innovation at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. And also, of course, to add his voice to this conversation, we're joined by Professor Shabir Madi, the Wits University Professor of Vaccinology and also the Dean of the Health Sciences Faculty at Wits University. I'll start with you, Professor Madi, and I'll start by asking you the question. The number of deaths are down, and it would appear there's widespread community immunity, and whether that's naturally or via vaccination, is it time to scrap these rules and return to normal? And is it that simple?
Good morning, Bongani. And the short answer is certainly so, based on where we are currently in the pandemic. And as you correctly pointed out, despite really stuttering vaccine rollout, inadvertently, at least 70% of South Africans developed immunity and protection against severe disease, and that was before the Omicron wave. We are planning to repeat that study, and I wouldn't be surprised if that figure now sits at 85 to 90%. So much of the regulations that are promulgated under the Disaster Act, unfortunately, right now, it got more detrimental effects than positive effects. And in fact, to some extent, in fact, it's completely counterproductive as to what we should be doing at this phase of the pandemic.
But critics will say, hang on, the regulations were there to manage a number of challenges, including, of course, providing economic relief and to combat the disruption that would be due to the effects of the pandemic. Those are surely still with us.
Well, not the disruptions due to the pandemic. In fact, the regulations right now are creating more of a disruption than the pandemic itself. And the reason for that is we're no longer expecting to have overwhelming of healthcare facilities, and COVID-19 during the course of 2022 is unlikely to cause any more deaths than would have occurred before COVID in relation to seasonal influenza, which causes about 10 to 11,000 people to die in South Africa, and in fact much less than 58,000 people that will die of tuberculosis. With regard to the social relief under the Disaster Act, that can be incorporated under the Social Assistance Act. So we're not saying that we need to do away with the 350 grant, but that can be incorporated under other acts that exist in South Africa.
The World Health Organization has warned we're not quite out of the woods yet. We have to be careful not to abandon everything.
Certainly not. And I think we need to focus on what matters most. And what matters most is that despite the large level of population immunity that exists, more can be done to protect those individuals that are most likely to have breakthrough infections and die of COVID still. And those are people above the age of 50 with underlying medical conditions. So we still need to continue our vaccine drive and get that above 90%, especially in people above the age of 50. And that should be the primary focus when it comes to COVID-19. Much of the other things that we do, as an example, social distancing, simply has got very little role. Including in schools. So schooling is a good example where we're still enforcing rotational learning, and there's very little reason to do that, but it is being done under the auspices of the Disaster Act.
But people will also argue, hang on, there's still a lot we don't know about this virus. Perhaps we might have more deadly variants. Omicron seems to have been mild compared to some of the earlier ones, but what if something worse comes along?
Well, I'm wondering if something worse could come around, and it might be not just the COVID virus, the virus that causes COVID, but the new pandemic virus. And are we going to wait for that eventuality? And the answer is no. And I think we need to be clear that if there is another variant that comes along that is so much different that is able to evade immunity that protects against severe disease, essentially we are dealing with a completely new virus, which would mean we're dealing with a pandemic on top of a pandemic. It's extremely unlikely that we're going to get a variant that arises that is able to evade immunity that protects against severe disease. But we are going to get another wave, and we will see future variants. But we come to a point where the type of immunity that's been induced because of vaccines as well as natural infection is a type of immunity that will persist and protect us against severe disease and death.
How do we do this when the rest of the world is still dealing with some of the worst effects of the virus? If you think about things like the PCR or antigen tests, for example, masking and the like, we've already seen the backlash against this country for simply identifying a variant. If we were to scrap all of this, these regulations, wouldn't that put us on a target list?
Not at all. In fact, the United Kingdom is going this route just from this week, as you might have heard the Prime Minister mention. They're pretty much getting rid of almost all regulations related to trying to mitigate COVID. And we need to be clear that we've been particularly unsuccessful, and many other countries have been extremely unsuccessful when it comes to preventing infections, because if we had been successful, we wouldn't have had 70% of South Africans get infected with the virus during the course of the first three waves. So the measures that we've put into place haven't protected us against infection. It has had some value with regard to safeguarding healthcare services by spreading out those infections over a longer period of time. But it has very little impact when it comes to protecting against infection, unlike countries such as Australia, New Zealand, where they were able to prevent infection, but they're in a difficult position now as to how they get out of there because the zero-day COVID is now passed by all countries.
Professor Shabir Madi, as always, appreciate your time. 702. The Big Interview with Bongani Bengwa. All right, you've heard from Wits University of Professor Wits University's Professor of Vaccinology. We're now joined by Professor Musa Mushabela, who was listening to all of that. He, of course, is the Professor of Public Health, but also the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research and Innovation at UKZN. Prof, good morning to you. You've heard what Professor Madi has to say, and many others who agree with him, who say that the costs of the ongoing state of disaster are simply too high. And you can look at any number of fronts, from health to education. It's had untold socioeconomic repercussions. Where are you on this?
Good morning, Bongani, to the listeners. I think that the call to end the national state of disaster, it's warranted, and many of us support it. I think the question really is, how do we go about doing it, and at what pace do we do it? I think that it's unrealistic to call for it to end today or tomorrow, because then there's going to be a lot of things that need to be considered. And for example, you know, we know that on the one side there are issues related to the pandemic, where we need to define what are the metrics that are going to tell us that we are out of the pandemic. Even the WHO has not established that yet. For us, we could say that, well, there are early signs that things are looking good. But even if we do say that and we accept that, we still need to say that, okay, what are the costs of actually ending the state of disaster? What are the benefits that we are getting from it? Yes, there are things that are potentially causing harm, but what are some of the good things we need to preserve? And as Prof. Madi also said, that there are things that then need to be moved into other legislation. The National Health Act has been considered for some of the things that can be used to carry some of the regulations, and there may be other acts in other departments that have to be considered. But at the moment, those legislative structures are not there in place yet. We need to make sure that they are put in place, and that's what we are asking for.
Part of the difficulty, though, Prof, is even as you talk about what we may need to do to consider our way forward, I mean, one does accept that we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but part of the challenge is we haven't always been able to tell the basis of some of the decision-making. People even say that at times they seem unscientific or indeed irrational. The courts have even said so once or twice, but most worryingly, with a lack of accountability and transparency.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I think that, you know, we've had nearly 2 years of the national state of disaster, and I don't think that anybody wants that. Ever since the National State of the Disaster Management Act was promulgated in 2002, this is the first time that we have actually had to test it. We've never had a national disaster since then. For the most part, even the pandemic itself was new to many of us. We haven't had a pandemic in over 100 years. So many of us and many policymakers were kind of navigating uncharted waters. And for the, you know, when you are dealing with a lot of uncertainty, yes, you will make mistakes because certain things you're not sure of. And it's not right, in my view, to look in hindsight, now that we know what has happened, and make unfair judgments on those decisions when those decisions have helped to carry us, to bring us to where we are. So we need to make an allowance for that, but also then be critical to say, right, what are the things that we got wrong? What did we get right? But how do we move forward in a way that is responsible and we don't repeat the same kind of mistakes that we have made before?
As much as caution may be warranted, but we also need some urgency. I mean, one has to just look at the education system. Professor Madi was mentioning rotational learning. This is something that is going to continue to have disastrous effects long after we've made a decision about which way to move, based on an already poorly performing public system, further entrenching inequality. And the private schools, of course, are steaming ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in my view, many of the challenges we're seeing in the education sector don't really need the end to the Disaster Management Act. They can actually be included in the regulations. I think it's a matter of people who are education specialists and people who are epidemiologists and so forth, who are clinical infectious disease specialists, to sit together and figure out the best way to manage the situation in the education sector and then make sure that that is included in the regulations. I don't necessarily think that it does call for an end to the Disaster Management Act in itself. We need to make sure that the regulations can allow for that while we are still dealing with other legislative concerns.
Sure, but my bigger worry is around the lack of urgency or even agility in deciding these matters. It seems that we're waiting. Yeah. I mean, there isn't a sense, as I get it, that these discussions are even underway. It just seems that we take a long time before we kind of wake up to the reality we're living with.
Yeah, I think the policy environment in South Africa is the three problems in my view quickly. One is that we don't always communicate very well. And that is the biggest lesson that we have learned in the past 2 years. The second thing is that we don't necessarily deal with things proactively. We don't prepare well. You know, someone can say, look, all of these things need to have been considered before. Of course, they are right. But we tend to respond when we are in a crisis. We are reactive rather than proactive. That's a big problem. And the third thing, as you said, is the fact that, you know, we find very difficult to coordinate amongst us. People are used to working in silos. And so whenever there's a time to work across sectors, it becomes very difficult to coordinate that, and it creates a lot of disruption. So I would say that, yes, there are problems with that policy landscape. And more recently, I mean, there has been a lot of poor communication and a lot of confusion. But I can tell you that I'm aware that these discussions are taking place in terms of how we move forward. There are committees that are working on this. But yes, a sense of urgency and, most importantly, communication about what is being considered, what is currently being put in place. All of those updates can actually go a long way.
If they are, Professor Mushabela, one would argue that they're doing so at a snail's pace. I appreciate your time as always. Professor of Public Health and the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research and Innovation at the University of KZN.